You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. On YouTube, if you're listening, go watch us. If you're watching us, you're amazing. Listen to us as well, because you can hear us twice. That's what you always want. I'm David Goss, joined by my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle and Charlie Davies. We just had a solid hour pre-show meeting about Inter Miami. We're not even going to discuss in this show. But if I mention Sergio Aguero and who else?
Diego Costa, Duvan Zapata. Coutinho.
That's our title then for YouTube. So you're welcome. Everyone out there who's working on that one. We got a great show coming up, though. I think the quarterfinals, best round of the tournament so far. Great soccer, high stakes. You can see the quality in the teams that are still in there, how comfortable they're starting to be. Some big surprises. Not one in the Minnesota-San Jose game because everyone had that one pegged, but surprises in other games, you know, outside of that. We've got, obviously, two semifinals coming up. First one, Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, Philadelphia Union against the Portland Timbers on FS1, 2DN, TSN, and TVA 2. That's two for you non-French speakers out there. Up in Canada, we're going to have Alejandro Bedoya on to help us preview that game and talk about a whole lot more going on in the world. And then semifinals closes up the next night, 8 p.m. Eastern time once again, Orlando versus Minnesota, the Adrian Heath Derby on ESPN2, ESPN Deportes, TSN, and TVA 2. Once again, you've got your MLS Today presented by AT&T pregame show for every single one of those shows. And then you've got your postgame show presented by Audi with these guys, Kaylin, Susanna, all the good stuff going on. You've got your virtual fan experiences going on as well. Tony Sane was in the Minnesota United one. We've seen Timber Joey hanging out as well. You gotta love watching a guy cut a log on Zoom. That's where it all comes through. Now that I got a lot of that out of the way, I have to give one plug to our man Kaylin Carr. Did a movement episode about a year back when the shooting in El Paso occurred. Terrible tragedy. Great story about how the soccer community experienced it, got through it together, and how they're working to try and make this world a better place for everyone. Alejandro Bedoya, of course, coming on, had some big moments last year talking about gun violence in America. So we're going to talk to him about that when we get there. But let's get to the soccer that happened this weekend. And let's start with the Portland Timbers, NYCFC. The super sub of MLS, Diego Valeri, comes off the bench, gets the winner. Doyle, this is what we've always talked about with Diego Valeri. This is actually only the second game since November of 2015 the Timbers have won, where Valeri started the game on the bench. Caitlin Murray with that stat in the Oregonian. So thank you, Caitlin. But Doyle, I felt like NYCFC came out. They had Maxi Morales on the bench. They played toe-to-toe in the first half, and it felt like NYCFC was going to be the one on longer rest to step forward in the second half and take the game over. Valeri and Nijgoda come in, and it was the opposite, and Portland got the win.
Valeri and Nijgoda and Andy Polo with a rocket. Put some respect on that man's name. The first 20-25 minutes, NYCFC were really good. They were actually, I think, controlling the game a bit. Obobese missed one that could have maybe changed things very early on, but NYCFC deserved their lead. But then after that first half water break, it was basically all Portland. And I think Jose Varese made some adjustments in terms of where Sebastian Blanco was picking up the ball, and that allowed him to sort of dictate the game as a number 10. And then in the second half, just being able to bring in Valeri for 45 minutes. And this is what a natural progression should. This is what Totti did at Rome, right? Totti played till he was almost 40 years old. And by the last 5 years of his career, he was like a part-time starter, but more often a super sub. And if you see what Ilsinho can do coming off the bench in this league, if Diego Valeri can embrace that role, like, okay, you're going to start every third game, but mostly you're going to change the game for us in the final 35 minutes, that makes the Timbers absolutely fearsome. And then the other thing about it, I don't like Obobese on the wing, but it's impossible to ignore that when he has been on the wing and Nijgoda has come in, Nijgoda suddenly had all kinds of room right in front of the center backs. And that, like, okay, now you just players spreading the team out a little bit, and Valeri's getting the ball in great places. It was a comprehensive victory that final hour from Portland. They did it with talent. They did it tactically. They did it with man management and great subs from Gio Savarese. NYCFC is a talented team. They still brought in Maxi. They still brought in Ever in the second half. Timbers were hands down better. So, I mean, congratulations to them. They absolutely deserve their spot in the semis.
Charlie?
I honestly just thought
blown that... away by Doyle there.
I really thought that Gio Savarese should get a ton of credit for how he prepped his team for this match. But Sebastian Blanco is fantastic. And to get that crucial goal before half, to go in at 1-1 was massive for this team coming out in the second half, saying, okay, we're still in it. Now we're back in the game. We have to change some things, make some tactical adjustments. And then he was just as influential in the second half as he was in the first half. He played that ball in behind for Valeri initially, where Niashkoda finished. So Blanco is just such a fantastic player to watch. The way he can combine, float into the right spaces, whether you find him out on the touchline or he drifts inside, he does a lot for that Portland offense. And New York City just couldn't stick with him. Whether it was Alex Ring getting dragged out of the space, whether it was Eric Williamson also being effective, finding the right spots, keeping the balance in the midfield when Chara would be dragged out, Eric Williamson filled in, or if Eric Williamson needed to push out, it allowed Chara to read the play. It made play predictable for Portland. So they are a fantastic team to watch. Niashkoda adds a lot to that team. Now, when he plays up top with the Bobasi, there's interchanging as well. It's not just Niashkoda is going to be in the middle and you stay central. That's it. They interchange, which also gives them more flexibility when they attack, makes them a little bit less unpredictable, and which I think in turn gets them to score some more goals.
And to be able to say about a Portland Timbers team that you can have a way to play unpredictable, you can play more than one way for a team at times last year and 2 years ago, but not as much, where it felt like if things went wrong, they just kept trying the same thing over and over again. This is a whole new element. And Savarese pushed the right buttons. No one has said Diego Valeri is a super sub. He played 90 minutes 3 days earlier against FC Cincinnati, so didn't start this game, came off the bench. Gio Savarese didn't say this is Valeri's role now. He just said, I had to be smart about the way I'm handling this tournament, handling these things. But as you said, Charlie, they can change the game. They've got now two center forwards they can bring off the bench. They've got in Eric Williamson multiple options at central midfield because Paredes, who is a legitimate MLS starter, is on the bench. And then they brought Valeri in this one. But if he doesn't start, you've got options. And of course, someone tweeted at us, Doyle, and said, Andy Polo taking on the spirit of Dairon Asprilla.
Post-season body. I think that was his second goal in 55 MLS games. And it was a Dairon special because it was absolutely like, you have to pass this. You have to pass. And like, you could see Valeri's reaction as Polo decides to shoot instead. Like, he goes full like cobra pose, and then it's like back of the net. It was a Dairon moment for Andy Polo. He's got to work on that celebration, though.
Apparently, it was for his daughter.
Yeah, I liked it.
She told him to do it, so it was Nico Lodero style, pat in the butt. Yeah. He did it for her in Disney World. You gotta throw it out to the kid. No,
absolutely fair. So it was an awesome moment for a player who has struggled a lot, and I think that Savarese has put a lot of faith in him to kind of figure out where he is on the team, and maybe this is what he needs.
So, Charlie, you mentioned Blanco. 2 goals, 5 assists in this competition. Where is he in the potential MVP of this tournament standings?
If Portland win this tournament, he'll be the MVP. It's that simple. But again, MVP goes to the team that wins. So there's no outright, no matter what. Like, if LAFC had been to this point and Diego Rossi continued to score goals, if they don't make it to the finals, then there's still a good chance that Diego Rossi would be MVP. In this situation right now, whoever's winning, the most impactful player on that squad is going to get the MVP.
Well, it will not be a player on NYCFC. They are headed home. Mm-hmm. Last little tidbit from this game, Diego Chara, his 300th career official competition for the Portland Timbers. A guy who came in the OG days. It was dark for a little bit, but he's been a major part of everything good that's happened. And now he gets to play with his brother in Disney World. Yay!
respect, because he's one of those players that's been so consistent every year. You know what you're going to get from him, and never got credit until recently. He got into his first All-Star game, which is also mind blowing because when you think of defensive midfielders in this league, he's always one of the top three. Always.
And when you think of All-Star games, you think defensive midfielders. Roll out
five. Of course. I mean, still warrants an All-Star selection. He's been that good, which is great to see that he's getting finally the plaudits he deserves.
So not yet a consistent player, but in the other matchup coming into the semifinal, we had Philadelphia against SKC. It was a 3-1 win. I put notes down to go through this game. My notes are five lines of all caps saying Brendan Aaronson with 15 exclamation points, Charlie.
Yes.
Let's go. I almost broke my apartment during this game. Are you kidding me? Graham Zusi is not going to be able to sleep for months thinking about Brendan Aaronson. This was a performance. Young guy, big stage. Everyone's watching. It's the only game of the night. It's the start of the quarterfinals. Everyone's home. Nothing to do. You're hearing Euro rumors. And he comes in with his best performance against a legit SKC midfield. This was epic.
Yeah, I 100% agree. He has taken the necessary steps to show he's ready for the national team, to show he's ready for Europe. And when I watch him play, it's not just because we've seen him last year and the year before. He makes good runs, but it was always like, oh, he makes a good run, but he doesn't really know exactly what comes after that. He's making a run, dictating the space, making the decision easier for him once he does get the ball. And you're seeing him be a little bit more aggressive in the final third. The combinations, whether it's a decoy run, which I've been impressed with as well, he'll create space for other players with a run, knowing what he's doing. And then following the play up, combining his awareness, this spatial recognition is fantastic because he'll take in a pass to his feet. And in between two players, he'll know exactly the right touch and the pass after the right touch. It's been fantastic to watch him grow. And I think as a young American midfielder, when you start to get all this attention, sometimes that can work against you because you feel like, oh, I got to do a little bit more. He's kept it simple. Mm-hmm. And he's delivered. So when you have a player like that, it's very easy to get overexcited about. But I'm going to be really interested to see how it comes up in a semifinal matchup now against the Portland side, who's very good defensively. They're organized. We talk about Diego Chara following you around and chasing you down. Now I want to see how he plays against players like that who are going to be really physical with them. We talk about Mabiala, who will always get his hands on him, look to kick him, rough him up. He did well against KC. Now, again, it's another challenge. Can he step up and rise to the occasion?
There's no such thing as getting overexcited. Young American attacking. He's the greatest player in world history, Charlie. I don't even get that. Sorry. Congratulations, Christian Pulisic, for scoring an FA Cup final. He got hurt and lost. That part worked out. Brendan Aaronson, greatest player in the world. Doyle, also a guy we talked about coming into the season. I think we both discussed in our preseason show, like, if Philly's going to take a step, Sergio Santos has to be a legit goal scorer alongside Cibilco, who's had a tough tournament. Santos was fantastic again, had the winner in the round of 16 and got it done once again in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, had a brace in this one. I actually thought he was far and away the star of the show, and he has to be for Philly to... like, Aaronson has great moments, but he got on the ball 14 times in this game. God. Like, he still has so much work to do in terms of finding the ball in possession. He can make a play, and the way he receives the ball is fantastic. The way he received that pass from Bedoya on the assist to Santos, that was amazing. It was a De Bruyne pass, but I still think he doesn't pick the right spots in the buildup to be that number 10. But anyway,
Doyle is no longer a partner in soccer. Continue.
We buried the lead. The lead is Sergio Santos. Because the only way to justify the 4-4-2 diamond for Philadelphia, well, there are two ways. One is Aaronson keeps developing as a number 10. The other is for Sergio Santos to be a goal-scoring threat, not just in terms of transition, but also when they have those moments in possession, when they are knocking the ball around. And that second goal he scored, that was a perfect example of that. But also on the first goal, he was able to function as a center forward. They were able to play off of him. Bedoya makes that run, squares it to Montero for the tap-in. He was great. And then with Sergio Santos, you know you're always going to get that work rate. He has been consistent with that. His defensive presence is excellent, but he has been not great in front of net pretty consistently. And the other thing is he gets injured. But this felt like, okay, we put it all together. And for that final 20, 25 minutes of the first half, it was literally the first time all tournament that Philly have played good. Like, they have not played good soccer to this point in the tournament. They've had ideas, but they haven't executed them. That final 20, 25 minutes of the first half, they executed just about every idea they had, and they just steamrolled the Sporting KC team that I think we all felt was, like, one of the possible favorites to win this thing.
Before we dig deeper into semifinal, let's close on that, Charlie. 3 goals in 15 minutes for Philly in the first half. Mm-hmm. SKC going home. It's been an up and down tournament, would probably be the easiest way to describe it, with a lot of downs. What do you take away from SKC?
Alan Pulido, fantastic signing. The defense of Sporting Kansas City, same old issue. Inconsistent, pulled out of position, not in line, making poor decisions when you step into the midfield. There's no confidence on the ball to build out of the back with the defensive central defenders. You talk about Matt Beisler, what he brought to the team as far as a center back who can get on the ball, is confident, can play forward. With him out, it's no one's filled that void. And they're still trying to play out of the back. They're still trying to have that same philosophy, yet they don't have the player to do it, to initiate it. So for me, you got to go out there and either work on it religiously or go out and find a center back who can do that for you.
You mentioned Brendan Aaronson only had 14 touches, which means I can get to all 14 of them in this show. Destroyed Felipe Martins 1v1 on the dribble. So Zusi had a tough night. Buncic had a tough night. Graham Smith and Felipe Martins. That's going to mean your team's probably going to do fairly poorly. As Charlie mentioned, I want to get into this semifinal. Philly versus Portland, 8 p.m. Eastern time. FS1, 2DN, TSN, Tevia, Du up in Canada. And who better to do it with than a fellow Northeastern alumni, no, just kidding, Boston College and Philadelphia Union midfielder, Charlie's former BC guy, Alejandro Bedoya, the Philadelphia Union. Ollie, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, let's have it. Let's do this.
See, Charlie, he's not offended by the Northeastern connection.
It's how could we be offended by it? I mean, we are
Boston better school. College Eagles. You are right.
You know, we're a Boston College Eagle, so we're at the top. We're at the top. No worries.
I did take over Charlie's dorm room, and I have to, like, you know, organize a little bit, though.
Do you want to show us? Do you want us to show us your room right now, Ollie, or should we just leave that?
No.
Don't talk about the soccer jerseys I had hanging in my dorm room. Like,
who was on the wall?
Ronaldinho. I had Ronaldinho's Barca, the yellow kit they had.
Yeah,
and I had Henri Arsenal.
Kit. Boom! Two great players. Yeah. Two great times. Ollie Bedoya. Some people are going to have your names on their walls. Maybe Brendan Aaronson, maybe Mark McKenzie. Definitely Martinez's jersey, because he's been awesome in this tournament. That was a dominating performance at times versus SKC. It feels like maybe the best you've had in this tournament. What's the feel inside the group coming out of it?
Yeah, I think obviously it was a great team win. And we've just gotten, I think, more confident as the tournament has gone on. You know, we haven't been as sharp in the final third throughout the group stage, and we just kept harping on, you know, got to be better movement off the ball and sharper with our passes and stuff. And I think against Kansas City, I think all three goals were a sign of us being, like, more kind of that killer instinct, you know, in the final third. Those were some good solid goals, you know. So I think everybody's excited, and you know, we're looking forward to the next game, and hopefully we can win that one as well.
Ali, what's been the growth within the club since you've gotten there in 2016? I remember, you know, it was a lot of youth coming into this team. It was more about producing talent. Now you're competing for trophies. How has that transition gone?
Yeah, it's been a gradual progression. I think when I first got here, we were having, you know, we got quality now in all positions, I would say. You know, when I first got hit to the club, you know, it was still a challenge. I think it was an ambitious one, you know, where they wanted to get that kind of experienced guys on the field mixed with the youth and the academy guys stepping in, making a difference and having an impact. And now we're seeing that, you know, with Mark McKenzie, Brendan Aaronson, even guys coming off the bench, and, you know, Jack Elliott, even a draft pick, you know, making a difference as well. It's been an upgrade. I think we just gradually progressed. A great job by the training staff. Got to give them credit, coaching staff, because, you know, I think we've done a lot with what we've got. You know, we don't have these marquee names or big money spent on certain guys that are able to make a difference, but as a collective, as a unit, we've gotten all, you know, the guys to really buy into a certain way of playing, you know, working hard at each things, and yeah, it's just been just to see the growth of the club and the growth in each position, you know, player by player. You know, when I first got here, I would say we had center backs that maybe couldn't hit a diagonal ball or couldn't play the ball between the lines, and like we do now, like we can try to play now. So it's been good. I've been, you know, happy to see this club go in the direction that it's going.
You mentioned that direction, the big names. I would argue when you got there, though, people were, one, surprised you went there, and probably there was very few games Philly came in as favorites. Now you host a playoff game last year, you win it. You're favorites right now to win this competition statistically and in a lot of people's minds. Do you feel that change with the team? And when you go into games, when you step on the field, that it's not the little engine that could, Philly has a shot here, no one notices us. And now it's the Philadelphia Union are mentioned in that top 5-6 group consistently in MLS.
Are we though? Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe. I think we definitely have earned a respect of our, you know, kind of other teammates across the league or other clubs and coaching staffs and stuff. I feel like, you know, whenever you're playing against the Philadelphia Union, you know, you're in for a tough one. You know, you got to be sharp. You got to be on your A game because we're going to give you a battle. We're going to fight. We're going to be able to grind it out. You know, we may not play well, I guess, technically, or have possession 60% of the time or whatever. But even when we do have that 40%, as you've seen in this tournament, we're going to be hard to break down. And, you know, they say defense wins championships. You need your goalie to make huge saves and come up big. And we have that in Andre Blake. So I think we're a really well-balanced team now, you know, and, you know, we're no longer the underdogs that maybe we were, I guess, before I got there. I think following the league from abroad and stuff, you always heard about, you never heard much about Philadelphia Union, even contending for anything or, you know, up for a game. So, and now you are, I wouldn't say favorites all the time, but, you know, we're a team that is going to give you a tough game, and we're more than capable of, you know, controlling the tempo of the game and things like that. So it's been good to see the growth in these 4 years that I've been here.
Ale, since you're the godfather now in this locker room, you have young players like Brendan Aaronson who is starting to thrive as a midfielder. How are you pushing him, and where have you seen him grow? How has he got to the point he's at now? Because as a young player, we've always saw him. He was always confident, but maybe that idea was missing, or that final ball. Now we're seeing him make that difference. He's making that killer final pass or being on the end of the service.
Yeah, I think, you know, just talking with him, he obviously is a great kid, very nice. And he's a guy that's willing to listen, you know. So I think the things that I've just preached to him now is, you know, he's got all the tools to be just a great player. But now can he raise it to the next level? And that pass for the third goal of Kansas City is what I've been just preaching to him all the time. You know, just if you get that final ball right, I mean, you're going to be a top player. And just to see that happen, you know, that little hip check, the movement, the split two guys and find that splitting ball perfectly, you know, put the perfect kind of touch to it. That's what's going to take him to the next level. And that's where I've been harping with him. And then the other thing was before that game, I felt like, you know, you read the headlines and you see all the hype around Aaronson, this and that. And I just felt a couple games, you know, maybe he's trying to find the game too much now, like trying to get to, like trying too hard, you know. And that was something that I struggled with even coming here as a DP when I first signed the first 6 months. Is like, I need to do something. I need to do something all the time. I get on the ball at every moment and make stuff happen. But if you just, like what I was just telling him, is like, just calm down, you know, just you're number 10. Like, you don't even have to move that much. Let us move the ball for you. Let the center backs and the back line move the ball. And you just sit in the middle. And as soon as a six is moved out of his spot, we're supposed to be the guys that are finding you in those empty pockets and those spots for you to be productive, you know? So, you know, I think that was something that I think that he's going to take as well, you know, and just a little bit of movement here and there, and everything else is, you know, that final ball is coming to him. And, you know, I think he's got loads of potential and, you know, it's like, endless possibilities.
Like you just said, he could be a top player. You've been in Europe.
Greatest player of all time.
You played against the best. You played in the World Cups. What is his ceiling and where do you see his natural progression? What's the next step for him? Where would you recommend he you know, look to play in Europe?
Well, yeah, I don't even call him Brendan anymore. I just call him Bundesliga in training.
Okay. Okay.
It's like, hey, Bundesliga, here, pass it to me. We're doing something. But, you know, that's a great step. You know, we see a lot of young Americans there and doing well, performing well. We know it's such a great league for young prospects. So I would love to see him make a move there, wherever the club is. Obviously, that'll be a testament to the club, you know, and their investment they put into the academy there. And, you know, you'd like to see that pay off as well for the guys who have put money into that. But I think that's the next logical step for him, is to get on a team there, whatever club it is, for him to get minutes, for him to get playing time in that environment, and to keep improving. And that's where I think he's going to take that next step.
What do you call Mark McKenzie? Because then we can get the transfer rumor started there. So what league is Mark McKenzie's nickname?
Mark, well, we just call him Super Mac, because that was that one headline in the Scottish paper, whatever it was. So now we just call him Super Mac. That's his nickname.
He's been awesome, though, in this competition. The whole back line has been. You mentioned Andre Blake as well. A little bit of shift maybe in the mentality of this team from when you had Madunian and dominating possession and playing in those areas to maybe sitting a little deeper and finding the danger in transition. For this group, what have you made of the development of McKenzie and Elliot next to him and the play of Andre Blake?
Yeah, it's been great to see Mark, you know, see his growth. You know, at times last year he was even relegated to the bench, maybe, but it takes a lot, you know, for a young player to just keep grinding it out and know that when your time comes, you got to have an impact, right? And he's been all that. You know, I think Charlie knows from being here, when you first saw him, I mean, he had all the physical attributes already. And he was a guy that kept working on his passing range, you know, staying after training, you know, passing out of the back with both his right and left foot. And you see that now, you know, his ability to step into the midfield, even with the ball dribbling, eliminating the strikers, or even just eliminating midfield players with his passing through the lines, or even outside to his outside backs. So, you know, his diagonal ball has gotten better. Jack is also a guy that can hit a diagonal ball, you know, and find the wingers in the open space. So all these things, you know, this is in the modern day game, you know, your center back sometimes are almost like key players, you know, in the sense of how they can break teams down with their passing out of the back. And then Andre, you know, he's been a wall back there. You know, I don't even know if we'd be here if it wasn't for Dre. So defense wins championships, as they say. And, you know, we have a really stable back line, you know, Ray and Kai as well, up the sideline. So I think that's been a key to us. And Martinez, you know, he doesn't bring the passing range maybe as Harris does, obviously. But I don't even know. His nickname is a Brujo, which translates to wizard, but he's more like a pit bull. he might break the record of yellow cards in the season, though.
Yeah, you got to watch out for that. Looking ahead to the Portland Timbers, because they're in the Western Conference, you haven't run into them all that much. What challenges do they provide you guys? What's in front of you?
Yeah, I think it's always been about the way they have guys that in the final third that can just make something out of nothing. You know, Diego Valeri, Sebastian Blanco. I've seen Ebobisi. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I'm not sure. Sorry if I'm wrong.
Ebobisi. Yeah, it's all right.
Ebobisi.
Charlie's an expert.
Yeah. He's done well too. So, you know, I don't know if Diego Valeri's starting anymore all the games, but he's like their new El Seno, I guess. So he can come off the bench and score goals. Super sub. But, you know, they got quality, you know, in the final third. I think there's definitely, you know, in their back line, I feel like there's something that we can take advantage of there, though. And I think that's what we're going to be working on these next couple of days. We'll look at film and see where we can break them down and get some overloads going and things like that. But, you know, they've always been a solid team since they've been in the league. So it's a team that that you have to be wary of. But for sure, I think we can definitely break them down.
8 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday night. That game's going to be awesome. Two teams that have played at a high level this whole competition, facing off, so many different ideas. We could talk to you about it all day, but we want to take some time to talk off the field a little bit as well, because it's the 1 year anniversary of the shooting in El Paso, Texas. And Kalen Carr did a feature for the movement with Sebastian Velasquez, who was down there, and a lot of the teams down there about using soccer to get through this experience and how we can hopefully try and make the world a little bit better. You made a grand statement, of course, about gun violence in general against DC United on national television as well. I'm curious, a year or so along now, what have you seen in this fight? What have you done in your life to try and change the reality for your kids, for Charlie's kids, for, you know, our whole country?
Yeah, I think obviously ever since that incident, or even before that, I was already working along with an organization called Every Town and Moms Demand, you know, and just doing different initiatives across the country and locally in Philly, where we just try to get some gun reform going. You know, we've seen things happening in states like Virginia, or voted in different kind of policymakers, where we can try to improve the gun violence epidemic that's going on in our country. You know, it really is. You know, being from going abroad and being in Europe, you know, America is almost like a laughing stock. Like it's crazy to believe the gun violence issues that we have in our country, you know. And what happened that weekend in El Paso and Dayton as well, you know, that was what was on the back of my mind the whole weekend there before that game, and caused me to kind of say what I said in that statement. And I think it's just something, you know, it was nonpartisan. It was just something that I think as a human being, you just feel, you know, how many more times do we have to deal with things like this? You know, the Parkland shooting, that really hit close to home to me, growing up in that area and going to that school many, many times, having friends going there as well. It's just something that it's hard to wrap your head around, you know, even in Philly, when you get calls from your child's teacher saying that your school is on lockdown because there's a shooter in the area, you know, that stuff is tough to take in, you know? So it's something that I'm involved in and I'm passionate about, because as a country, I think it's something that we can definitely come together and realize that how can we improve our society, our daily lives, our, you know, our peace of mind, where we're not looking over our shoulders all the time. We're going into spaces and thinking about like where the exit is in case something goes off and happens. You know, that's not a nice way to live, go about life. So gun violence reform is something that I am passionate about. And I'm going to continue to working with these organizations to see if we can make a difference in our communities.
That's why you're one of my closest friends, because you speak your mind and you use your power of influence for the right reasons. That's why, Alejandro Bedoya, you're a boss. Keep going. Best of luck in the next match against Portland.
You know, Can I ask one last question, Charlie? Or are you saying that because you're friends with Ollie, I can't ask any more questions?
No, the Boston College connection will allow you to ask one more.
Okay, one more question, last one. What you talking about gun violence, what Warren Cravall has done for the Black Players for Change, Ray Gaddis, who is one of the main founding members of it, Mark McKenzie's been out smoking. Is this a culture inside your locker room? Is it something you as a captain try and push in players to think outside of soccer, to talk outside of it? Because a lot of young athletes wouldn't have the confidence, I think, around them that Mark McKenzie has to maybe say the things that he's been able to and push and all those ideas. Is it just the type of people that came together, or is there something that you as a team try and do to make all of this happen?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't really take credit for that. I think it's more of like the culture that we're kind of building here in Philly, you know, and that's just not from me or upper management or anything like that. I think that's just the type of players we have in the locker room, you know. But I will say it is, we have that atmosphere where guys are, you know, have the ability to speak out and you know, and be human beings besides soccer players, you know. There's more to soccer. There's more to life than just soccer. So big credit to Mark, Ray, and Warren for the initiatives on, you know, the Black Players Coalition and what they've done, you know, the Black Lives Matter tees that we're wearing. You know, they put a lot of work around that. And I think to that end, you know, when we talk about social injustices and racism and stuff, it was nice to see that during the quarantine period, as a team, as a collective, we were able to get together, hop on Zoom calls and really talk stuff out, you know, talk about kind of their experiences, learn about certain things that maybe we didn't know about, especially the younger guys, you know, because there's things out there that we don't get taught this stuff in school, you know? So to really hear them out and to have a locker room where everybody really feels comfortable with one another, it helps to be successful on the field as well. You know, it goes a long way. So
in last locker question room, for me,
we built a great a locker room is a microcosm of society, kind of, you know what I mean? So in that sense, I'm really proud of the guys we have in the locker room, not just as soccer players, but as human beings.
I know you're a massive basketball fan. You got Kevin Durant as part owner now. Have you had a conversation with him? And has he been aware of what you guys are doing in the locker room as far as, you know, the Black Lives Matter tees that Warren Cravall is making? And has he had any, have you had any interaction with him?
We've had some interaction. Yeah. We hopped on a Zoom call, you know, kind of introducing him to the team, and guys, you know, had, were able to ask some questions, you know, just some little banter here and there. I'm sure he's well aware of what we're doing. I've seen him comment on a couple of pictures, you know, both on Twitter and Instagram. So he's a bit more, he's being active, and that's kind of cool to see. And it's just nice to see a guy of his caliber, you know, invested in our club and, you know, trying to take us to the next level. And, you know, speaking with him, I'm sure, you know, once this is all over, I'm sure he'll pay a visit to the club and get to interact with them a bit more. But I'm looking forward to seeing him back on the court once he gets fully healthy.
A lot of cool things going on around Major League Soccer, and most of them coming out of Philly right now. The soccer on the field, the creativity, and the leadership off the field as well. Alejandro Bedoya, thanks for taking the time to come join us for this one. I know you only did it for Charlie, but I also appreciate you coming on. Maybe we'll be friends one day. Who knows? Either way, good luck against Portland coming up.
Charlie, man, I'll never blank you, bro.
Okay. Appreciate it, Bruchon.
All the best, guys. Take care.
Always great to have Alejandro Bedoya come on. One of the best people in Major League Soccer, in the U.S. soccer sphere. Excited to see what he can do in this upcoming game. Levi from La Granda, though, a little upset in the mailbag, says, you underestimate Timbers far too much. They are looking amazing in this tournament, and to see that they are the lowest-ranked team to win it in the polls blows my mind. Their movement off the ball has been amazing. The amount of people involved in play has been awesome. They've beat every team and have shown they have the ability to go at teams and break them down. They have resilience and comeback ability. They get lame calls sometimes. Just admit it. Castillo's fall like a bag of potatoes. He should work on that. That's Tati Castellanos. But he said Castillo. yet you guys stick to NYCFC and LAFC like we have a two-party system. Cough, cough. This league is comprised of so many other amazing teams that you choose to not mention.
Well, I know I was just as shocked as my man right there about Portland being at the bottom of the poll, because I thought exactly what he was saying. The introduction of Eric Williamson in this midfield has really changed the dynamic. He allows them to be a little bit more aggressive and play a different style because of how flexible he is, how confident he is on the ball. You have Charo, who's always going to be a six. He's always going to be defend first, get it off his foot. But you needed one more player in that midfield who could do it both ways. And Williamson not only can break up plays and defend, but he can get forward. He can be confident on the ball. He can play that extra pass to get it through to a Blanco in space, or to put it in space over the top for Bobasi, and make deep runs out of the midfield to get involved in the attack. He's the X factor in this squad. Then you talk about Valeri coming off the bench. As long as he's okay with it. Now, that's an important factor. If he's not going to be happy about it and sit on the bench and pout, then you have a problem on your hands. But if he's like, okay, I'm bought into it, I understand I'm up there, if this is going to maximize my career and give me, you know, a couple more years of playing time, then I'm okay with it. And I'm happy to be a part of it and be an impact player off the bench. And if he keeps scoring goals off the bench, he's going to be A-okay with it. And that makes a big difference for the locker room vibe, for the way that they approach everyday life as a Timber. If he's happy, the squad is going to be happy.
I got to ask, what poll is Levi talking about?
The playoff poll.
I think he's also talking about 538 put out their odds of who
can win. That one.
Yeah. It's not an emotional thing. It's supposed to be based off data. Philly's the favorite to win the whole thing. Not just head-to-head, 31%. Minnesota is second at 27%. And Orlando and Portland are tied in third and fourth, whatever you want to call it, at
21%. So 538 is their odds. That's on us. That's, yeah. We did that wrong.
No, an independent source doing a data analyst, that's on you, Doyle. in your face.
I can agree entirely with what Charlie said about the, well, first of all, let me push back on Levi. At the start of this tournament, I know you, Gasman, and me, and I think Weeby all identified Portland as like a dark horse candidate to win this entire thing. We're not going to mention who Charlie chose, okay? Because we don't do that. We wouldn't throw teammates under the bus like that. Because of their ability to sit deep and absorb and willingness to go forward and hit on the break. But I agree 100% with Charlie that Eric Williamson has changed the way this team is able to play. And you saw actually on the first goal, the equalizer that Portland scored against NYCFC the other night, NYCFC had him actually pinned against the sideline. They had him trapped in a situation where if it's Paredes on the ball, it's a back pass. You just recycle anything, everything. Instead, Williamson's able to beat them both, split the two defenders, get into the heart of that NYCFC defense, and then hit a defense-splitting pass to, I think it was Loria, in the pocket on the other side of the field. Like, this is not a play that shows up in the box score, but it's a play that entirely changed the tenor of how NYCFC were able to defend. They went from being on the hunt, trying to force a turnover, to being in a complete scramble situation. And suddenly you get Blanco coming into the midfield from a little bit deeper, getting on the ball with nobody around him. He's able to pick the pass with Viafania on the overlap, and it turns into the equalizing goal. That doesn't happen last year for the Timbers. They didn't have the talent in midfield to do that. So it's Portland has gotten to a point in this tournament where I don't think most of us are surprised. I do think what's surprising is the way that they've done it. And I do think it speaks to an immediate and a long-term change in how they're going about winning games. And it certainly made them a lot more fun to watch than they were last year.
Oh, yes.
Just put our right back on the touchline here, our left back on the touchline here. Whichever one gets the ball first is going to launch a 40-yard cross, and we hope that somebody wins it. Like, that was it last year for the Timbers. It's so much better in 2020.
You would expect coming up against Philly that they'll have potential to do that again. Philly hasn't dominated possession in this tournament. They don't really want to. My one question for you guys, because I don't understand, would be if you've got a diamond for Philly, you've got three in midfield for Portland, where do you get that extra help for Portland, or does it not really look that way?
Well, it depends in the shape of the game. I think there's going to be times where Philly's in possession and they're knocking it around. And I think on the flip side, there'll be moments where Portland dominates possession. But the key is in the midfield for Philly, Aaronson coming back to check, because at times he's level with Shabilko and Sergio Santos. And because of his movement, because you have two center backs who are stuck with them, and the outside backs sometimes are pushed wide because Philly pushes their outside backs, Kai Wagner, Ray Gattis, so high that then you have those gaps where Aaronson fills and makes great intelligent runs. In this match, Montero, Bedoya, and Martinez are going to be tasked with the midfield trio of the Portland Timbers. They're going to have to be reliable on offloading when you have Obobese come inside. It'll be interesting to see. Maybe they start in Nishkoda and have Obobese on a wing. But Blanco and Obobese have to come back into the midfield. And then you're going to look for that, whether it's Martinez filling in to a pocket, but because Philly love to push forward with their central backs, whether it is Jack Elliott, whether it is Mark McKenzie, they're not afraid to follow strikers into space. Portland Timbers are going to need a lot of movement along the front three to gain the advantage in this match.
Do we have predictions? Well, you have to. So I'm telling you, you have to pick a team.
Oh,
and
man.
You gave me a quick why, but you've also given me a lot of why already. So let's go. Come on, guys. Underestimate Portland once again. Let's go.
Go ahead, Doyle. You go first.
Saving mine for the column.
I'm saving mine for the pregame.
I'll save mine for if anyone ever asks, because none of you. So it's
David,
fine.
What's your prediction, David?
Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Doyle's mic's out, Steve, so let's try and work on that. FS1, 2DN, TSN, and TVA2 up in Canada. Thursday night, 8 p.m. as well. As you know, you've got your MLS Today presented by AT&T pregame and MLS postgame presented by Audi, so make sure to stick to MLSsoccer.com for all of your news going into this game. And it was a dominating performance by the Loonies on Saturday night. Minnesota 4-1 against San Jose. Doyle, once again, Adrian Heath pushes every right button. No Molina, no Roman Mentaner, no Ike, no problem. Dotson was awesome. Ja'Cory Hayes scores a goal in his first career Minnesota start. And this was peaking at the right time. This was Minnesota's best performance of the whole tournament.
It was, but it was not unexpected at all, given that they have just dominated San Jose for the past year and a half. Like, they're, if you go back to how they, like, Michael Boxall scored a Franz Beckenbauer goal last year by just getting on the ball and taking all the space they give him, because with San Jose's man marking scheme, one of your center backs is always free. And that center back has to have the ability and confidence to just stride forward with the ball and force that defense to make a play. And San Jose has not done that against Minnesota consistently. And nobody has taken better advantage of it than the Loons. So you have that, and then you have Minnesota's set-piece dominance. They are far and away the best team in the league on set pieces. Then you have the mistake a game from Guram Kashia, which they were able to punish. And it's just like, it was all the, like, everything I wrote in my preview, including Tommy Thompson getting forward and drawing a penalty, like, every part of it, these two teams check the box. And I think it's fair to say at this point that Adrian Heath has absolutely figured out San Jose's man-marking system. And until the Quakes show otherwise, anytime in the future these two teams play Minnesota, it doesn't matter who they have, who's missing, Minnesota are huge favorites to just stomp them, because that's what they've done. That's what they've done time after time after time.
Still impressive to step up, though, without so many key pieces.
For sure. But it also speaks to, like, they crushed the draft last year, getting Gregus and, Gasper and Hassani Dotson, who was awesome in this one. They've made some really good signings, and in terms of Jan Gregus and, getting Jose Aja for nothing, and he's had a very good tournament for the most part. Like, he's fine as a third center back, it turns out. And then, Ja'Cory Hayes is the type of, like, found money type of signing that we've, over the years, we've seen other teams do really good work with that type of player. Everybody knew Ja'Cory Hayes had a ton of talent, wasn't going to get to show it in Dallas. Minnesota got him for nothing. And here he is putting in a performance like that, which, to be fair, it seems like it's pretty easy to play okay if you got Ozzy Alonso and Jan Gregus elsewhere in the midfield doing a lot of the dirty work for you. So it was just a complete performance from Minnesota. And given what they've done to the Quakes time and time again, this was not a surprise.
Those guys dominate in midfield. Gregus is so smooth. He's so much fun to watch. And Ozzy gives him that license. We have a question from Cold North Rants on Twitter, though, Charlie, which is, where do you see the future of Hassani Dotson? Is it midfield or is it as fullback?
Oof, he was phenomenal at right fullback. The problem is, when Mettenair gets healthy, he's not going to play over Mettenair. So
he was pretty good in this game.
He was. But what are you going to tell me? You're going to bench Mettenair now for the rest of his time in Minnesota? No, that's not happening. You want your best players available. So Hassani Dotson has to be on the field. That's a given. I think long term, right back is probably the best position for him, where he's going to play the most. And you talk about U.S. men's national team, because that's obviously the goal. Right back is probably the spot where he has a real good shot at being the starting right back, if he can maximize his potential going forward. There's not a clear-cut favorite at right back as of now. I mean, Reggie Cannon
has... Wait, searching your desk, man.
Well, he's playing left back at the moment for the U.S. men's national team.
He's played both.
If you're, I'm taking Serginho Dest as a left back at this moment because we don't have a left back.
Okay.
No one has stepped up to the plate. I mean, if Serginho Dest is right back and we find a left back, then Dotson, try the midfield. But right now, I thought he's the type of player that he can play right back or he can play as a number eight in this league. He has fantastic ability to read the game. He can lock you down defensively. I think he showed that against Vaco, whether it was getting in front, cutting off that entry ball. His first touch was fantastic. Tackling, he's strong on the tackle. And then just his movement off the ball was fantastic. He knew when to step, when to drop. making good runs in the space, and he could play in tight spaces, which is something we haven't seen a lot of when it comes to the young American players. So I think long term, he probably has his highest ceiling at right back.
And you look at, one, the way he played at right back, a lot of times when central midfielders, a defensive midfielder plays in that spot, they want to come in field, connect. He looked comfortable running, you know, running at guys, taking up space, getting high up the field, getting crosses in. But his flexibility is going to be huge if you talk about a national team. That's the type of guy you want to bring to a tournament. He can play in three or four spots.
Normally, the defensive midfielder probably doesn't have the pace over a long period of time to get from end line to end line, box to box. Hassani Dotson has the pace to be an effective right back because he can get up and down and make those overlapping runs, which you need from a right back, which I think 9 times out of 10, a defensive midfielder is not able to do that consistently over 90 minutes. So that's where I think Hassani Dotson could make that his long-term place.
Before we step to the next game and look at the semifinal, Doyle, I'm curious, outside of just never playing Minnesota, for San Jose, you look at this tournament, we had question marks coming into the year. Could Matias Almeida get more of an improvement without really changing the roster outside of Alanis, who we don't know how long he'll be here for? Do you feel like you have an answer to that question?
Yeah, I feel like the rosters or like the performances have been better. I have some questions about his team selection on that back line in particular. I think that there still needs to be an upgrade. When I look at this roster, I still think it's in the bottom 25% in terms of overall talent. But I think it was an encouraging month from San Jose. But it does come down to like, okay, even last year when they went 2-9-1 over their final 12 games, they were actually playing good soccer. The problem is they got one goal from their wingers over that 12 games. Over 2 months, they got one goal from their wingers. Well, Vaco scored a couple in this one. Christian Espinoza had a game winner. Shea Salinas had a game winner in this one. Fierro actually came off the bench once or twice and looked useful. Do you trust those guys to continue doing that? In those big moments, when you're in a playoff hunt, do you trust that group of wingers to be match winners, to score the goals that you need to score? And I'm not, like, as encouraging as this was, I'm not there yet with San Jose. And when you pair that with their shakiness in central defense, their shakiness in goal, and again, the fact that I think man marking is a gimmick that can be undone, I'm not sure what the upside is for the Quakes.
It was an interesting few months for the Quakes.
Fun as hell, man. I just want to say that
they were the last team to get to train first team in Orlando outside of Orlando. They probably had two of the best moments of the tournament in one game, a full field own goal from Judson off a corner kick, and then the spray celebration off Messi Salinas's goal later on that game. That game alone was worth the price, the flights for them, but a quarterfinal appearance for them. I think a strong tournament in general. And of course, Minnesota United moving on. They will face off against the home team, Orlando City, getting the victory over LAFC. And Charlie, this blew my mind when I saw it. LAFC had no shots in the first half. That is the first time in any half of any game in LAFC's MLS history that they did not register a shot. This was not Orlando City bunkering and surviving and getting through on PKs. They were the better team against the Supporter Shield winners.
They should surprise everybody. And I think they surprised LAFC with how they pressed, how aggressive they were in the attacking half. They were going to put pressure on LAFC. They were not going to allow them to build up out of the back. They weren't going to allow them to have space with Atuesta, Marc-Anthony Kay, and Latif Blessing. They were going to just suffocate them in the midfield. And when they had so much pressure, because I don't think they were expecting Orlando to be so much on the front foot, it just shocked them completely. And then Orlando just kept pushing, and weren't allowing them that because a lot of teams, when you're playing against a better team, it's natural to just drop off because you're like, you know what? They're so talented. Let's just not let them play in behind us. We're gonna drop back, be sound, organize, and then look to counter. This was, we're not giving them respect. Who are they? Let's show Orlando. I believe in you guys. And this is what Oscar Pereira talked about. changing the mentality of Orlando, saying, you know what? You guys deserve to be here. You deserve to compete against the best. You're better than what you think you are. This is how you're going to do it. You have to go out there and earn it. What'd they do? They went out there, smacked the LAFC from the get-go, and then they win the game. Now, Orlando believe, hey, we're one of the top clubs in MLS when we play like this. We have to be aggressive. We believe in Oscar Pereira. We believe in his style because look what it's done. And now you talk about Juan, João Moutinho, who's developing nicely under Oscar Pereira, being involved. Like I said, he had 103 touches, the most across the Orlando City side in the previous match, heading into that match against LAFC, showing, you know, he's confident. He's willing to build out of the back. He wants the ball. He's showing that left side, he can generate crosses. He can be effective. And Nani and Chris Mueller coming inside, combining, they overload the midfield. Oscar Pereira, Mauricio Pereira has been fantastic as the number 10 for Orlando. And they're doing this all with an average striker in Tesho Akindele, who's making the most of his time there. But this isn't a guy who's going to score 20, 30 goals. This is a guy who scores 8 to 10. Maybe he gets four or five assists, but they're making the most of what they have without a big time striker who's going to get you 20, 25 goals a game now, our season. So this Orlando side, and I think Pedro Galese as a goalkeeper has been massive because now you're getting stability, making the average save every match. You're not conceding a goal and being like, oh, here we go again. And then Antonio Carlos has been fantastic for cover for Robin Jansen because Robin Jansen doesn't have pace and he's been exposed quite often. But Antonio Carlos has been perfect when it comes to, okay, now I know he's got me. He's going to cover me if I do mess up or I do make a mistake or I do get burnt for pace. He's there to cover. This team is looking really organized and confident.
And all the things you mentioned, Charlie, were wrapped into like 5 minutes where Mueller goes out, puts his arm in a sling, so we don't know what's going to happen with him, and we wish for the best. Nani misses a PK to go up 1-0. They basically have LAFC go back the other way and score to go ahead 1-0. And I'd argue almost any team in the league against LAFC at that point
folds.
75th minute, 77th minute, they fold. Orlando didn't just throw numbers forward. Like, they seemed to believe that the goal would come, and it came through a guy, Moutinho, who got traded from LAFC and kind of had been given up on. And Doyle, it all came together. Great Nani celebration post PKs, but as Charlie said, mentality, everything, whatever, everything that's going on was going right for Orlando.
So I largely agree with that. I don't necessarily agree with any team that is meeting LAFC and gives up a goal in that situation folds, because I think everybody in the league at this point knows that with LAFC, no lead they have is safe. They're as likely, if not more likely, to fold than you are at this point in knockout round and tournament style games. They will always leave themselves open. And credit to Orlando City and Oscar Pereja for taking advantage of that. I want to go back to what Charlie said and how Orlando City smothered LAFC at the start. What impressed me most about this Orlando City performance is that on the rare instances where that has happened to LAFC, they've just turned on the press. They've said, okay, we're not able to string anything together. We're going to press the hell out of them. We're going to turn them over every time they touch the ball. We're going to manufacture offense from our defense. And they were so clean. Orlando City were so clean, building out of the back, getting on the ball, making the right runs. Pereira is always available. Somehow he is everywhere on the pitch, always the easy outlet for his entire team. Jordi Rossell looks revitalized. He has not played this well since 2013, I don't think. And it's like, even missing Junior Urso, you just plug Sebastian Mendes. And I know he had that terrible turnover, but he, by and large, played very well. So this was a performance that convinced me that Orlando City are able to, like, they can go out and beat good teams in like a variety of different ways. And they showed it the game before against NYCFC. NYCFC had 64 points last year. LAFC had 72. That's 140 points or close worth of great soccer teams that Orlando City was better than. Just like, no sugarcoating it, no caveats or anything. Orlando City were just better than both of those teams for like 180 minutes. It's really impressive. They, like, I understand why their fans are clamoring for, you know, DP number 9 if you look on social media, because that does seem to be the bottleneck. But at this point, it's really hard to pick against them because there's not an obvious weakness on this side. Mm-hmm. And in Nani and Pereira, they have two DPs who are, like, if you're a DP, you're supposed to be a match winner. Those guys have been match yes. winners. So Oscar Pereja, you know, pat him on the back. I was tweeting out on Friday night, build the statue already, Orlando fans, because what he's done over the course of a half dozen games, most teams this takes a year and a half, 2 years.
We hope the next guy up continues. If Mueller can't go, it seems like it'll be Benji Michel out there on the wing. He's been pretty good off the bench for them. Earlier in this game, BWP had a goal called back because of video review, through video review. And we got to hear what all the referees had to say. That's been a really cool part of this tournament. I think it's something that's echoed across the world. Everyone in every sport is like, why isn't this not what it always is for review? So you can understand what's going on. And I think it's made it feel quicker and more efficient because you have something going on while you're watching it. And it's clear to everyone why the call was made afterwards instead of the unfortunate for Stu Holden or Taylor Twellman trying to guess and figure it out on live national television, which I do not envy in any way. Before we step forward into this semifinal preview, I want to bring it back to what Doyle loves, which is finding something to beat a good team with.
Wait, let me just correct myself. I said back-to-back that Orlando City beat NYCFC and LAFC. That was not back-to-back. No. Obviously, the NYCFC game was in the group stage. But anyway, I misspoke. Just wanted to get that on the record. Go ahead, David. Sorry.
Nick from Honolulu has got your back here, though. He says, guys, love the pod. Really enjoy listening on my commute in Honolulu. That sounds sick. I wish I was there right now. I think you all provide good insight. Thank you. Keep the compliments. But as I've been listening to your show and other analysts throughout the last few years, the overall consensus about this LAFC side in the past few seasons is that they are one of the greatest teams in MLS history. However, I don't see it because of their consistent losses in playoff history. My theory is that they are not as good as other teams such as Sounders and Toronto because they don't step up in big moments. They don't lose a significant amount of their players to international call-ups in the middle of the season or have any large excuses, but yet they still can't perform in these big games. What's your thought on his theory?
I'm not a big proponent of his theory. I think if you're the best team over the course of 8 months, that's more significant than being the best team or luckiest team over the course of, you know, a 1 month tournament. But it is a stumbling block. What makes 2017 Toronto FC unquestionably the best team in MLS history is that they won everything they were competing for: the 8 month regular season, the in the middle of it all Canadian championship, and then the postseason tournament afterwards. So it's like I think that winning the Shield in the manner that LAFC did last year is more significant than winning MLS Cup. I know that's not conventional wisdom. And I also think that, you know, when you talk about this tournament, the fact that they got to the quarterfinals without Carlos Vela and with the back line still under construction, probably more of a point in their favor than a knock against them.
Okay. There you go. Charlie, did you want to follow up there? Are you good?
Just when you win trophies over a period of time, over a year, it's TFC without a doubt. And LAFC over a course of a season was just fantastic. And you're talking about this tournament for a month long. They're missing Carlos Vela.
But I think he's saying it's Open Cups, right? It's Open Cup semifinals at home. You go to PKs when you could have hosted Philly. It is it's CCL. We don't know yet. Mm-hmm. And then it's playoffs multiple times, always at home, though. So you're talking about games where they're favorites, opportunities to win and progress, even if it's not this competition. I think that's what this tournament was for LAFC. You had a lot of teams where it was like, we want to win. We want to go to CCL. But what does everything mean? And I think LAFC had a clear statement they could make of, we can win one game knockout competition. Of course, they're missing Carlos Vela, but a lot of people are missing players throughout this competition, and they didn't get that done. And I think that is sort of, I'm assuming that's what Nick's saying.
Okay. But Carlos Vela's whole entirely different conversation.
Oh, you mean the best player in MLS?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's a pretty big miss.
But their back line is what's in question here. That's LAFC's weakness right now. And I'm sure they're looking to improve things there.
There's a former Stanford defensive midfielder who could swap in at center back, currently hanging out on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Bob, give me a call. I'll give Bobby a call. It'll all work out. It'll be good. So the next game, 8 p.m. Eastern time, Thursday night. You start off beforehand with MLS Today, presented by AT&T. Then you've got the MLS Companion Show, second screen on Twitter, which we did this weekend, which was awesome. Alexi Lawless played Wonderwall on the guitar, like out of nowhere to close things out. A lot of fun. I made some Peruvian friends. I've been texting about Pisco for the last 2 days as well. And then me and Doyle talked about Soltal. So it's been a pretty on-brand weekend for me. The potential for that on Thursday. And then afterwards, you've got the post-game show presented by Audi. And the game, of course, 8 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2, ESPN Deportes, TSN, and Tevia 2 up in Canada. The Adrian Heath Derby. This is the one we've all been waiting for. Doyle, yeah. When you look at this matchup, what stands out? What's the edge for either team?
What stands out to me is that I think Orlando City have shown the ability to beat teams in multiple ways. Right? We know that they can be a counterattacking team. It's like rule number one of Oscar Pereja teams is they don't need the ball to hurt you. And with the speed that they have and the playmaking they have in central midfield, if they get out on the break, then they will put the ball in the back of the net, but they've also just cut teams apart with possession. And then on top of that, we've seen them be pretty good on set pieces. I mean, the Moutinho goal to get them into the PK shootout in the quarterfinals being an example of that. And then, you know, as Charlie said, they pressed LAFC for the first 25, 30 minutes of that game. So they're checking a lot of boxes. Whereas with Minnesota United, they don't really use the ball a ton. They're just not a possession team. They can't build chances out of that. But what they're excellent at is capitalizing on your mistakes, and they are just hands down the best team in the league on restarts right now. Gregorius's delivery is incredible, and then they just have like four or five guys who are aerially dominant, and they've been scoring better than a restart goal per game, it seems like, over the course of 2020, if you go back to March. So they have this one specific way for the game to play out and can beat you with that,
which is very effective,
which is super effective. But on balance, if you look at it, like, I do think that Orlando City are the favorites going into this team because of that variety of attack they can throw at you. And then the other thing is, like, in Nani and in Pereira, they have these high-end attackers who are winning them games. Mm-hmm. And I like, as balanced and impressive as a lot of what Minnesota's done in the attack is, they don't, like, Robin Lud's not going to go out there and be like, Robin Lud took over that game. He just won that for us. Like, that's not, you know, Ethan Finley is not going to do that. Amaria, I don't think, is going to be that guy. So there's just a, look, it's Adrian Heath getting to play the underdog once again. So I'm sure, he'll clip this segment out and it'll go up on the bulletin board. They'll have gifs that play as they walk into the locker room.
I think Orlando's the underdog here, and I'm going to go with the underdog. I'm going to go with the underdog this time.
Wait. Why are Orlando the underdogs?
I think Minnesota is the higher in the 538 predictions, that their percentage is higher than Orlando. So therefore, Orlando's the underdogs, and I'm going to go with the underdogs in this. And Oscar Pereja is a big reason why, because he's a top coach. And I think you talk about coaching advantage, Oscar Pereja, whether it's, okay, this time we're going to switch things up and change tactically. And I think he's better in game when it comes to in game tactically managing his team. I'm going to go with Oscar Pereja. So yes, I think Pedro Galese is a huge addition. I think he's been big time for them. Mm-hmm. I think Uri Rosell has also been big time for them as far as making that right pass, making himself available, building out from the back. But they showed against LAFC, they can handle the counter press. They can handle when teams press up against them. They can play out of tight spaces. Because of that, I'm going to go with Orlando, because they can hurt you in a different variety of different ways. Sure, Minnesota will concede possession because that's not typically what they do. Orlando can break you down. They have Nani. They have Prey. They've shown that they can do that. But they also can sit back and counter. So like Doyle said, Orlando have the edge for me in this match.
So we've got two Orlando picks right there.
I didn't pick Orlando.
Yes,
you did. I just said that they're the better team.
I just said they're the favorites in this one.
But I didn't make my pick. I'm saving that for the column.
It says on the wall behind you, Orlando.
Charlie's just giving you guys a little taste of the pregame show. Charlie knows how to help you wet the beak a little bit, get you involved.
Sorry. So we've got two picks here for Orlando. I'm going to go with Minnesota because I think that Orlando without Chris Mueller, they're going to dominate possession. How do they break down a Minnesota team that sits in numbers? And then you look at the potential that Kevin Molino could play in this game after being out for a little bit in the place where he like won USL MVP and all those things. I got narrative. I got hot boys. I've got underdogs. I'm good. I'm ready to go.
But anyway, let me ask you this. Okay, so we saw what Orlando City did to Montreal, particularly Victor Wanyama. So the way Thierry Henry uses Wanyama is he just sits in front of that back line. He wins every second ball, and then he sprays. And that's actually how Minnesota have been using Ozzie Alonso. If you think back to Ozzie Alonso throughout the course of this decade, it's not like he wasn't just protecting the back line and dictating the game. He was all over the field winning every ball. So what Pareja was able to do in that game, and was so impressive, was use Pereira as a decoy to drag Wanyama up the field and expose that. And I think that is actually going to feed into the game plan for what they want to do against Minnesota United, because it's like Ozzie keeps showing it game after game after game. If you don't drag him out of position, he's going to sit there in front of those center backs, and you're going to have to go in a different way. You're going to have to go in a different direction, because if Ozzie's there, you are not going to create anything up the middle. It's going to be fascinating to watch to see how both these managers try to solve that.
It's going
to
be a good one. Two games, two semifinals, Wednesday, 8 p.m., Thursday, 8 p.m., and then we will have the final coming up the following Tuesday, which means we've got a brown liquor special coming for you Thursday night, post-semifinals. Woot, woot. Then we've got Monday to preview the final for you as well. So get your Sotal out, whatever it is you need. Come and join us. It is going to be a lot of fun this week. A lot of good soccer. MLS is back. It's been fantastic to watch on the field. You've heard throughout the NBA return over the last week how much they've taken from what MLS did and how everyone's enjoyed learning from it and all those things. And we've got a week left of soccer to enjoy. So let's cherish it while we can before we return to whatever else is on the other side in the rest of the world. I want to get to the mailbag real quick. And my guy, Charlie Davies.
Let's do it.
Charlie Davies. Everyone's perfect. Charlie's the man. Stefan Wenk here says, I'm getting caught up on the July 30th episode of Extra Time. Make sure to catch up on all the past episodes because we said so much good stuff. Did Charlie Davies really just suggest Inter Miami to target players like Duvan Zapata, a 29-year-old striker being linked to a $30 million plus move to Juventus?
Mm-hmm.
Charlie, would you like to speak on that?
Yes, I would say players of that caliber, not necessarily Duvan Zapata, but players who are around the 29-year-old age mark and guys that are still playing and performing at a high level. Prime, that's what you want. You don't want players past their prime. The whole point is getting players to MLS in their prime or around their prime, not past their prime. That's what Major League Soccer has turned into. We're not getting players who are way down past their prime. Guys who can still perform, and you're going to get 3, 4, 5 years out of them. That's who Major League Soccer should be targeting, and that's who Inter Miami should be targeting, because we're talking about a city, a club with an ownership group who are world-renowned when you talk about David Beckham, to bring in a player that's going to make a giant splash, who's going to grab headlines across the globe, because that's where Inter Miami want to go. So if you could get a player like Duvan Zapata, that's what you're trying to achieve. And whether it's Diego Costa, who's a big name player, who's 31, out of contract in 2021, Alvaro Morata, who's 27, contract out in 2023, but you're talking about a younger player who really is kind of not really doing it at that level, has shown flashes, but probably comes to MLS and lights it up. Juan Cuadrado, Colombian, he's 32. Douglas Costa, 29. Both contracts end in 2022. Those are players. And then we talked about James Rodriguez. He's 29. His contract's up in 2021. Hasn't really done it at Real Madrid. Comes to Inter Miami. You're talking about the influence. And I'm bringing up these Latin players because that's Southern Florida. You're talking about Miami. You're talking about bringing all of those fans to the stadium, because they all show up when Argentina's playing there. They all show up when Messi, or if there's a Real Madrid Barcelona Clásico, everyone's coming.
So or Peru Colombia friendly on February 7th, not during a FIFA break,
right? You're getting all those fan bases to come to the stadium. Bring one of those players, you're changing the game. Plus, you're getting a player who's going to deliver. So those are players. You talk about an Isco who's at Real Madrid, who's 28, and his contract expires in 22. These are all players that I think are exciting and possible because of David Beckham's connections.
I vote that you bring in all of them. Then Duvan Zapata will come, because who wouldn't want to play in that team? Plus, Inter Miami, decent chance at Supporters Shield if they get those guys. Not guaranteed.
Can I just say, though, if MLS is suddenly in a position where our teams are outbidding the likes of Juventus for like a top 10 striker in the world, then we all got to ask for raises, because I think Will has played a big part in that. I like your list and I like your ambition. I think that of the ones you listed, if you're going to spend that kind of money on a player, Hamas is the one who makes the most sense to me. His ability, like if you sign Hamas, and Real Madrid want to sell him at a cut rate, so it's in the realm of possibilities. He makes everybody on that team in the attack probably 20% better. And if Miami want to be a selling team, and they invested a lot in players like Carranza and Pellegrini and even Robbie Robinson with the idea of selling them on, there's not a better stage or not a better setup, man, than Hamas for that job, because he'll get you extra goals. He'll get you extra assists. He'll put them in the shop window in a way that not a lot of players in the world will. And obviously he is the most beloved player probably in South Florida, other than maybe Lionel Messi.
People think about soccer. You think about the beauty in the game. You're thinking that ball playing through the feet of Ben Sweat to Will Trapp to James Rodriguez to Julian Carranza. That's what we've all grown up dreaming about. That's what Charlie had on his wall in college at BC. That's what the game is all about. The mailbag's been awesome recently. Everyone, extratime@mlssoccer.com. Sometimes we don't get everything in the show, but I respond to a lot of people via email. We have some great conversations, because what else are we doing? So let's connect. Let's talk about soccer. And we got a lot of them in here. I'm stretching time here, but I'm going to go one more. And that's Paul Colixtay on Twitter. And he said, of the teams left in this, which would have the most work to do on their roster to be ready for CCL next year? Because remember, there are four teams left and MLS is back. One of them will win a CCL berth for next year's CCL with the win of this tournament. To you guys?
It's a really good question. I do think that just looking at it, Philly are lacking the same kind of depth that these other teams have shown they have. And that might be exacerbated in the coming months, yeah, because if McKenzie and Aronson and Jack Elliott, there's interest overseas in Jack Elliott for obvious reasons. He's very good and he's from the UK. So they could end up being a very different looking team come February than they are right now. And then the other thing is Ali Bedoya is awesome. He's also 33. Are you going to play him 4,000 minutes next year? Ilsenio is awesome. He's going to be 36 next year. So it's like they will have more work, I think, than the rest of these teams who really do seem to have more depth.
Doyle forgets that class is ageless.
Agreed.
Ilsenio has no age. He's got quality. Charlie agrees on that one as well. On that note, we're going to learn a whole lot about who's going to be headed to that potential CCL spot, because we are only going to have two games left when we come back to you on Thursday night late on. Don't forget pre, post game, during game, on Twitter, on MLSsoccer.com, on ESPN2. On FS1, TSN, Tevia, and everywhere else you can find soccer or anything else you want to do. We will have one game left when we come back on Thursday night, and it is going to be awesome. And I am very excited for the semifinals. To my partner in soccer, Charlie Davies, and to the other guy, Matt Doyle, because he said bad things and less positive things about Brendan Aaronson, because he was being the ultimate hipster earlier in the show.
For Ali Bedoya, something to work on.
Thank you for joining us. Have
find
a great
the
night.
Ball more.